blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Annika Gall from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. That is the North Carolina Reading Service, because we are heard all over North Carolina now. Yay! So, yeah, we were previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Well, welcome back, everyone. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from, oh goodness, such a variety of sources. But the first one is going to be from the Wall Street Journal. And this one is entitled, Looking for a Roadmap for Retirement? Good luck. Everybody has lots of advice on how to live a fulfilling life after leaving work. I've learned that it isn't worth much. And it's like trying to select a meal from a multi-page menu in a diner. When I retired from a 38-year journalism career in 2017, I was bombarded with advice from close friends, not so close friends, and even complete strangers, some of whom I met while standing in line in my local Social Security office. Keep playing a role in the world, or you'll feel marginalized. Don't get overly scheduled, or you'll lose the freedom you finally have. Get dressed and out of your apartment every day. Enjoy spending weeks on your couch, in your pajamas, reading novels. Pursue your dreams. Accept that you've accomplished enough and don't need to keep striving. I listened politely and tried not to feel whipsawed by the clashing counsel. No one told me what I most needed to know. You're entering uncharted territory. Until now, I always knew that I was, or what I was expected to do. As a child, there was school and playing after school with neighborhood friends. Then came college and my first chance to live away from home, followed by the challenge of finding jobs that supported me and matched my interests, and then, eventually, marriage and juggling a family and career. I didn't stick rigidly to a traditional timeline. My biological clock was ticking loudly by the time I became a mother at 37. I lost jobs and switched employers twice after I turned 60. But mostly, I stuck to the prescribed map. And when I deviated, I didn't stay off course for long. The tracks were so clear, so deeply set by cultural norms, that it was hard to stray very far. Free to wander. Now, for the first time, there's no map and no compass. The old guidelines about retirement are outmoded. No one I know wants to follow the path many of our parents took of moving to a retirement community to socialize exclusively with other seniors and have accessibility to nursing care when it's needed. And we don't have to. Many of my baby boomer generation can expect to live until 85 or 90, which gives us 15 to 20 more years between midlife and frail old age than prior generations. The question is what to do with those years. I have choices coming at me from every direction. I can learn to play Chopin or Mozart on the piano again, which brought me joy when I was young. I can read my way through Tolstoy, George Eliot, and all the other unread classics, gathering dust on my bookshelves. Do volunteer work for any number of causes, immerse myself in yoga, or audit university courses in subjects I skipped in college. Or I can continue to work, the latest form of retirement for growing numbers my age, often because financially they have no other choice. It's like trying to select a meal from a multi-page diner menu, which is harder to do than making a selection in a small bistro that lists just a few choices on a chalkboard. At first, I felt relieved that my decision to retire, which I'd procrastinated about for months, was finally behind me. But my initial euphoria soon morphed into anxiety. Suddenly, after decades of spending weekdays in an office surrounded by colleagues whose company I enjoyed, I was home alone and uncertain about what, if anything, I wanted to pursue. At social gatherings, I didn't know what to say when people asked, "What do you do?" The truth that I was mulling next steps in my mind, but unable to make a bold step forward, embarrassed me. No more shoulds. It took me a while, but I soon realized that that was my mistake. The idea that I had to take a bold step. The only way forward, I have found, is to experiment and not worry so much about what others think. In part, this is because people my age are each pursuing different paths. From spending most of their time traveling to most of their time babysitting grandchildren, and have less in common than we were in school or working full-time. But it's also because the only way I can chart a course that's right for me is to avoid the supposed-to-do mentality I accepted most of my life. There is no supposed-to-do at this stage. There is no well-traveled path that I can comfortably follow. What does all this mean in my daily life? Well, for one thing, I'm learning not to say yes when I really mean no. Instead of agreeing to do things just because I'm flattered to still be included or because I want to do something, I'm trying to select activities that give me pleasure and stretch me in new ways. I said no to a nonprofit board whose goals I support because my role there would mostly be fundraising, a task I dislike. But yes to another volunteer opportunity that connects me regularly with a high school student whose company I thoroughly enjoy. I've also joined the gig economy as a freelancer because I don't want to quit journalism entirely and can use some extra income to supplement my savings. But after a stretch of back-to-back assignments, I realized I was working as hard as before I retired, despite my intentions to savor more leisure. Time to loaf. And I've learned the obvious. Time is ever more precious. I have more of it to spend as I please on a daily basis, but less ahead than behind me, and no way of knowing how much healthy, productive time remains. I can't afford too many false starts or delays. So I pushed ahead on a home remodeling project, against my husband's wishes to wait until next year. I'm also limiting freelance work to assignments that most intrigue me, especially about aging, which I'm myself experiencing, but intentionally leaving time to meander and loaf. By accident, because I took a different route than usual to a favorite bakery, I discovered a Buddhist temple in my neighborhood I'd never seen before, and spent half an hour sitting on a bench inside, inhaling the scent of incense and the quiet. Still, if you're looking for the big revelation, if you're hoping for my piece of advice that I can pass on to you as friends and strangers did to me, I'm afraid I'll have to disappoint. Because if I've learned anything, it's that there is no one piece of advice. There is no single roadmap or retirement plan, only the ones we construct for ourselves. My plan, if I'm fortunate enough to live a long life, is to keep adjusting to new routes and know that any one route may not last that long, Because what's attractive or possible at 65 isn't at 75 or 85. And most important, my plan is to understand that the what's next question isn't something to fear, but to look forward to. And this article was by Ms. Heimowitz, a writer in New York. She can be reached at reports@wsj.com. Well, that was looking for a roadmap for retirement. Our next article has to do with planning a trip and how to pack for it. This article is from the June 2018, actually, issue of Real Simple. How to pack everything into a carry-on. No baggage fees, no lost luggage, just you flying through the airport with the greatest of ease. And this is by Yolanda Wickiel. Number one, have a strategy. Stick to this no-fail formula for a week-long trip. Pack one dress, six tops, three bottoms, two workout outfits, nine pairs of underwear and socks, and a set of pajamas, says Hitha Palepu, founder of the travel blog Hitha on the Go, and author of How to Pack. Opt for clothing made of fabrics that are less likely to rumple, like ponte, stretch denim, and polyester blends. Choose two pairs of shoes, three max. For most locales, you'll be fine with sneakers, heels, and sandals or flats. Two, make a list in advance. Start thinking about specific garments a week before you depart to sidestep snafus. This will give you plenty of time to do laundry, collect dry cleaning, and make sure everything is in good condition. Plus, you'll be able to plan out your mixing and matching, says Palepu. Wear your bulkiest items, jeans, sneakers, and a jacket, say, on the plane. Download Palepu's packing list at Hitha, and that's Hitha, onthego.com/list. Number three, select the right wheelie bag. There are four main types to consider. International, about 22 inches tall. Domestic, between about 21 and 23 inches tall. Hard case, strong yet rigid. And soft case, expandable but heavy. If you often fly out of the country and hardly ever check your bag, opt for a hard case that fits international size limitations. Consult the airline for specifics. If you tend to overpack or shop during your trip, and if you don't mind occasionally checking your bag, choose a soft case up to 23 inches tall. Number four, and the right personal bag. The right personal bag is key, as it can help you conserve space in your carry-on and have all your travel essentials within arm's reach, says Palepu. Go for a zippered tote or backpack with room for a laptop, book, and souvenirs. A bag that's 9 by 10 by 17 inches or smaller will meet nearly all airlines' requirements, she says. Your personal bag is also a good place to keep travel-size liquid toiletries, placed in a reasonable quart-sized clear bag per TSA rules, for easy access when going through security. 5. Roll and fold clothes. To roll or to fold? Palepu has the answer. I roll my bottoms and fold my tops. I find my clothes end up with fewer wrinkles and I can fit more in my bag. Use a packing cube, adds Kristen Addis, founder of the blog Be My Travel Muse. She likes the large 10 by 14 by 3 inch cube from the Eagle Creek Pack. It packet cube set, $28 on Amazon. You can add more than you expect because the cube compresses everything, she says. All right, and last but not least, number 6, pack it all up. Stow each pair of shoes in a shoe bag so the soles won't dirty your clothes, and pack them first at the bottom of the case. Place the packing cube next. Finally, cram compact items, swimsuits, underwear, socks, into empty corners or even inside your shoes. Include a laundry bag with a few dryer sheets stashed inside to bring dirty clothes home. And speaking of packing, here is something to think about for maybe summer travel. How to pack for adventure in Wyoming. A family road trip in Wyoming is a great way to connect with nature and reconnect with each other. It's the perfect destination for finding balance, from the right moments to use your smartphone to when you should really power down and enjoy simple pastimes. Here's how to get the entire crew ready to explore. Smart layers. With warm days and cool nights, and 2 national parks and 12 state parks to explore, Wyoming calls for versatile clothing for any weather and activity. Digital devices. Online map apps can help you navigate Wyoming's 4 popular road trip itineraries: Salt to Stone, Rockies to Tetons, Park to Park, and Black to Yellow. Light day packs. Prepare kids for family-friendly hikes like Devil's Tower National Monuments, Joyner Ridge Trail, with backpacks for carrying water bottles and snacks. Comfy jeans. Dude ranches are an authentic way to experience Western life, from horseback riding to cookouts. Bring long denim pants for proper cowboy attire. Car chargers. Keep smartphones and cameras fully charged and ready to snap pics of the rugged landscape and majestic wildlife. Waterproof jackets and swimsuits. From kayaking to whitewater rafting, water sports are popular on the Snake River, North Platte River, Bighorn River, and Green River. Action cameras. Share the action on social media with videos of free-roaming bison and wild mustangs recorded from the safety of your car. And finally, camping gear. Sleep under the stars at the state's many campgrounds, including 6 right in Grand Teton National Park and 12 in Yellowstone National Park. That's WY, Wyoming. For more trip ideas, visit travelwyoming.com. All right, and in case you're traveling, or maybe you're not, and have poofy eyelids and watery eyes, well, here's an article from the AARP answering your question, which might be, what's causing your poofy or puffy lids and watery eyes? Oh, great. You flip on the bathroom light, look at your reflection in the mirror, and come face to face with a pair of swollen eyelids. Unless you've gotten in the ring with pro fighter Conor McGregor or just finished a tearjerker marathon, you've probably got an ocular issue. What's prompting the puffiness? It depends. Possible reasons can range from pollen to pink eye to, believe it or not, your last mani-pedi. Here are a few common causes. Contact dermatitis. It doesn't take much to upset the thin, delicate, and frankly, cranky skin around your eyes. Our eyes. Contact dermatitis typically occurs when someone comes in contact with something that they have a sensitivity to, says Michelle Andrioli, MD, a Wheaton, Illinois-based ophthalmologist, that's ophthalmologist, and spokesperson for the American Academy of Ophthalmology. It could be poison ivy, the metal in the nose pad of your glasses, or the material eyelash extensions are made of. Your lid will become sore, irritated, red, or swollen. The first step is to avoid the allergens or irritants that are causing symptoms, advises Sumaya Ahmad, MD, assistant professor of ophthalmology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. And there is a conga line of possible culprits, including certain cosmetics, soaps, sunscreens, perfumes, eye drops, and contact lens solutions. Even airborne substances can activate an allergic response. The fumes from nail polish in salons is a common thing my colleagues have been encountering as a cause of swelling, says John Ng, MD, professor of ophthalmology and an orbital trauma specialist at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. Certain medications can also be triggers. Using ocular medications that contain preservatives, such as glaucoma drops or some eye drops, frequently can lead to swelling and inflammation, he adds. Ask your doc about less irritating alternatives. If you're reacting to something that is physically irritating, the surface of the eyelids, say mascara, switch to hypoallergenic products and consider wearing protective eyewear when venturing outside. Extreme temps and wind can worsen the condition. Keep the eye area clean and hydrated. Shower with a mild, fragrance-free cleanser before bed and as soon as you get up to get allergens off your face and lashes. Cool compresses can help by constricting the blood vessels to reduce swelling, Ahmad explains. Treatments may include a moisturizing cream, available with or without an RX, to soothe the skin, and a mild steroid-based cream used short-term to ease inflammation. All right. Chalazion. It starts out small, but within a few days, this firm, painless lump or cyst, usually found above the lashes on the upper lid, can grow to the size of a pea. Chalazions, as they're known, are caused by a malfunctioning meibomian gland in the eyelid. The oil becomes too thick to flow out of the gland and causes a blockage. Over days or weeks, the gland continues to secrete oil. Without anywhere to go, the oil builds up inside the gland, which blows up like a water balloon, causing a lump in the eyelid, Ng says. If you have a very small chalazion, try warm compresses for a day or two. Wet a washcloth, throw it in the microwave for 10 to 15 seconds so it's hot, but not so hot that it will burn your hand, says Andrioli. As soon as the washcloth gets cold, reheat to keep it moist and warm. Then put it back on the eye. Do this for 10 minutes, up to 6 times a day, for several days to help soften the hardened oil that is blocking the ducts. Gently massaging the lid a few minutes a day with a clean finger can also help soften the hardened oil in the cyst. A lot of chalazions will start to feel better and will drain, like a blemish erupting, Andrioli says. Most go away completely without treatment, though they can reoccur. If that bump won't budge, see your doctor. We typically give patients a steroid-antibiotic combination, Andrioli says. The steroid helps with swelling and discomfort. The antibiotic prevents it from becoming infected. Still no success? It may require an injection of steroids or something, or sometimes surgery. If a chalazion is around for several months, the body doesn't like the constant irritation and inflammation, so it tends to form a thick-walled capsule around the area, making it hard to drain, Ng explains. Surgery may be needed to remove the capsule. Blepharitis, or blepharitis. This is a funny-sounding name for a condition that is anything but. In short, blepharitis is an inflammation of the eyelids. It has different causes, bacteria and mites among them. But the most common thing that I see is blepharitis that develops as a result of the chronic skin condition, most commonly rosacea, says Andreoli. Indeed, it's estimated that ocular rosacea may affect the eyes of anywhere from 58 to 72% of rosacea patients. The condition often targets the oil glands near the base of the lashes. Secretions become thicker, like sludgy toothpaste, Ng notes. That causes a blockage, which can lead to inflammation, redness, and swelling. Rosacea rarely goes away completely, so it's important to get symptoms under control. If you have chronic inflammation over many years, you can get a very slow, progressive scarring of the eyelid. In fact, research has found that approximately one-third of ocular rosacea patients could develop corneal problems that could potentially affect their vision. One potential complication, Ng warns, is that the eyelashes can start growing inward and rub against the cornea, a condition known as trichiasis. To keep flare-ups to a minimum, start with a warm compress. The heat will soften blocked plugs and get them to open so secretions can start flowing. At least twice a day, massage the lids at the base of the lashes with a washcloth and baby shampoo or mild cleanser like Cetaphil. Diluted with warm water to loosen and express any debris from the clogged oil glands. An over-the-counter scrub specifically designed for the lids and eyelashes, such as OcuSoft, can also help rid the area of oil and debris and keep it from getting infected. Even blinking has benefits, helping the eye secrete oil. Try some open and shut at least 20 times, 4 times a day. Finally, avoid things that can trigger flare-ups. Hint, hot baths, spicy foods, caffeinated drinks, and alcohol are not your friends. All righty. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Make it a great week, and we'll see you next time.